morning to Genesis, the second chapter, Genesis 2, and we will begin at verse 16 and 17. Let me say before we begin this morning, it's such an honor to have one of my, I guess my kids. I consider him my son, and it's an honor this morning to have Jason Gibson with us from all the way from Tennessee now. We hope you enjoy your visit. I know you're going to be speaking several nights just down the road here at Hillcrest, and so if you get a chance to hear him, you will be blessed. There's no doubt about that. All right. Before I get all teary-eyed and emotional, I'm more that way these days. I'm sorry. I just get more emotional than I used to faster. So I'm working on that. I'm working through that. In Genesis 2, verses 16 and 17, we're going to minister this morning on decisions, decisions, decisions. Decisions, decisions, decisions. My dad used to say that all the time. He'd look at me and he'd see that stress on my face and he'd say, "Decisions, decisions, decisions." And I just think, "Dad, just leave me alone right now." You know how when you're young, you don't want somebody to kind of pick on that. It's like, "Dad, just leave me alone. I'm working. I've got some stuff. I'm working. And we'll be fine." And now I catch it from Taylor. I look at Taylor and I say, "What are you thinking about, son?" "Nothing. I'm nothing. I'm just. And so it's amazing how every one of us have to deal with decisions. One of my favorite stories is when Ronald Reagan, he's dead and gone now, but when he was really young, just a boy, and to tell you, he was, you know, kind of an older gentleman, so this will kind of date the story. When it was time for him to get a new pair of shoes, his aunt took him to the cobbler to have them made. In those times, you didn't go to a store and buy tennis shoes. You had whatever size you was, that's what they had to measure you for, and they would make them a little bit bigger so they'd last at least a year. And so the leather was made, but they had to make the sole to fit your shoe. So you went to a cobbler. And so his aunt took him to a cobbler, and so as he was sitting there, the guy looked at him and says, "Well, what kind of shoe you want?" She said, "You want square toe or round toe?" And the young little Ronald Reagan, he said, "I don't know. It don't matter. I don't care." And the cobbler came back in a few minutes later after talking to his aunt. He said, "Well, did you make up your mind? What kind did you want?" He said, you know, just being shy and not wanting to. He's like, "It don't matter." He said, "Well, okay, I'll take care of it." He came back about a week later, walked in, and the cobbler gave him his shoes. He gave him one square-toed and one round-toed when he made them. And the cobbler said, "Here, wear these for a year. And I have a feeling by the end of a year, you'll be able to decide what you want." He said, the cobbler looked at him and said, "Don't ever let anybody make decisions for you. Don't ever let anybody make decisions for you." Ronald Reagan said, "I learned a valuable lesson." Later when he was speaking about this, when he was a lot older and president and different things, he said, "I learned right then and there, if you don't make your own decisions, someone else will." Just know this. In our lives, our life is either built off of decisions we have made or the fact that since we didn't make a decision, since we didn't do anything about it, it got made for us. And we ended up in a place or a situation, whether we liked it or not, we ended up in it just because we didn't decide ourselves what we were going to do or where we were going to go. And in life, it's so much like that. In fact, life is absolutely all about choices and not about chances. And I spoke a little bit of that last week. It's not a chance that you end up where you are. It's a choice. You choose all the time where I want to go, what I want to do. I choose what I'm going to eat. I choose all the time. And my life is built on those choices. The reason I'm not 190 pounds right now, the reason I'm wearing the size pants that I do, is because of the choices of food that I make every single day. You know, most places that I eat serve salads. They say they do. I don't order them. But they say that they serve good salad. In fact, people tell me, "Man, they have good salads here. Sounds good. I want the burger with the bacon on it." And so I've heard, and then I complain as I look in the mirror. My wife, I know, gets tired all the time. I walk in, I say, "Now I am a sexy man, Elise. But I could probably lose just a little You know, 5, 10, 20, 30. And she doesn't disagree with me. I want her to just put her arms around me and say, "You are perfect." She just usually just walks out of the bathroom or whatever and just like, mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay. Life is about choices. In fact, let me show you biblically how this works. In Deuteronomy 30 and 19, we read this simple mindset. We'll come back to Genesis 2, 16 and 17, I promise. In Deuteronomy 30 and 19, it says, "I have called heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Therefore choose life, that both thou and thy seed may live." Your life, your family, is determined by choices that you're going to make. In Joshua 24 and 15, we find, "And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the gods on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." In 1 Kings 18 and 21, we have a prophet who speaks to the people and he says, "And Elijah came unto all the people and said, how long will you be between two opinions or two choices that are laying in front of you? If the Lord be God, follow Him. But if Baal, then follow him. And the people answered him not a word." We don't like making choices. We're like Ronald Reagan sitting there. "I don't want to offend. I don't know if I need round. I don't know if I..." And when we don't make choices, then choices get made for us. Ahab, the king at that time, was able to do all he was able to do. To have all of Baal set up. To have all these different gods that were set up. To have all this wonderful adultery and everything else that they were doing in the middle of God's land. And nobody stopped it. Why? Because when it was put in front of them, nobody ever spoke a word. Nobody ever made a decision and said, "No, that's not right. No, we're not going to live with that. No, we're not going to accept that." All of a sudden, we find in Daniel 1 and 8, or another verse, "But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself." Here we see a different story. We see a whole generation of people that won't stand up to a king. But here is one teenager who stands in front of the mightiest king in the world, who stands up in front of the mightiest person in the world and says, "Listen, I don't mean to offend anybody, but I can't eat this. I don't mean to be ugly, but I can't taste this. It's not fitting for me. It's not right for me. It's not what I was raised on. It's not what God's called me to eat. I'm asking you to let me eat the pulp, to let me eat vegetables, to let me eat these things. This meat and stuff that you're putting in front of me, this half raw stuff, all of this, it's not good for me. And God would not be pleased with it. I'm asking you. I'm standing up and making a statement. Will you please?" Here's a teenager able to do this, where grown-ups couldn't do it. If we go in our Bible a little further, go to Luke, the 9th chapter and the 23rd verse. "And he said unto them all, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me." Jesus looks at a group of people in his time. A lot of them loved him because he fed them. A lot of them loved him because he healed them. But he told them, "Listen, you're going to eventually have to make a decision. You're going to have to decide whether or not you will follow me." Our whole generation today is built off a generation that says, "I know Jesus. I've asked Jesus to forgive me. I've asked my sins to be forgiven." But this same generation, when you ask them, "Will you follow Him? Will you go after Him? Will you trust Him? Will you open up that Word and live by that Word?" They don't answer you a word. Why? Because we live in a generation where when Jesus comes to us and says, "Listen, I want you to make a choice. I want you to understand what the choice is. The choice is that you got to deny yourself. You've got to say, 'Self, you're not in control anymore. You're not running this show anymore. Then I'm going to pick up my cross. There's certain burdens and certain things I'm going to have to bear. There's certain things I'm going to have to deal with in following Christ. Certain friends that aren't going to like me because I serve Jesus. There's going to be certain incidences and situations that are going to come up because my life is this way. And then I'm going to have to follow Him. I'm going to have to lean in hard. I'm going to have to trust Him above everything else in my life." Do you understand? This decision making is not as easy as it seems. In John 7 and 17, we read it this way: "If any man will do his will, he shall know of the doctrine, whether it be God or whether I speak of myself." If anybody
decides that they're going to follow after him, they're going to have to decide, is he really who he says he is? Or was he just a man? The world looks at you every day and says, look, he was just a man. He died. Or maybe he didn't die. Maybe he and Mary Magdalene ran off to France together. They'll come up with all stories, but you'll have to decide. You'll have to make a decision of whether or not he was actually God in the flesh. Whether he actually was who he says he was. You'll have to make a decision in your life. That decision will determine whether you can follow him. Because there's going to be days when if you don't really know that, it's going to be very difficult to follow. If you really don't know that he's God and you're going to have to stand before him, it's going to be hard to follow him. Listen to me very carefully. Our greatest choice in life is not who we're going to marry. The first greatest choice we ever make in life is not what kind of car we're going to drive. The hardest choice you'll ever make in your life, and I say it honestly, the hardest choice you'll ever make in your life is not what kind of clothes you want to wear or what color you want your hair. The hardest decision you'll ever have in your life is whether or not Jesus Christ is who he says he is. From that decision, everything in your life will fall into place. Our problem is we have problems with all the other decisions in our life because we can't settle that decision. That's why some of us in here, we're doing great today. But let's be honest, we're only one probably bad situation from quitting church. We're only one bad phone call from being mad at God and not believing he loves us. Most of us in this room struggle with that first decision, and we think we can just go over it and jump over it and then all of a sudden go on to bigger things. No, that decision right there makes all the other decisions in my life easy. When somebody says, hey, do this, if I know Jesus is who he says he is, then it makes that decision in my life easy. No, I can't do that. Why? Because I got to stand before the Lord one day. Well, he don't care. Yeah, he does, because he said in his word he cared. He said, if you love me, you'll obey my commandments, and that's one he says don't do. So it makes my decision-making easy. It makes my life easy. It makes my purpose easy. Most of us wish we had. One of my favorite commercials right now is the commercial of the guy on the car commercial. You know, they come out with the tires now that if you air them up and they start to go too much air in them, a horn will blow. Ain't that kind of neat? You're airing up the tire and whoop, the horn will go off and all of a sudden you know, don't put no more air. Well, the commercial's kind of neat. Because you got this guy on there, and it's my favorite commercial right now. You got this guy, and he ain't quite the smartest decision maker. And so it starts off, you know, it's different scenes, showing him different scenes. One, he's just got his job. And he reaches across, and you should just shake the boss's hand and thank you. He grabs the boss's hand, he does this and this and does this and does that. And finally you hear this beep, beep, and he just, yep, okay, just shake hand. And the next, he's on a date. I love this one. You know, and he's just being a nice gentleman. He walks up, walks her to the door. He reaches over, gives her a smooch. And then all of a sudden you see the commercial and he's like... And when he does that, it's like the beep goes up, beep. He goes, oh, yeah, I know. Good night. I love it. In every situation in his life, he's even at a poker table and he grabs all the chips he's got, you know, thousands of dollars worth of chips, and starts to slide them all in, and all of a sudden, beep, he pulls them all back and just puts one chip. It's like, don't you wish in our life we had some little beep that would go off in our brain? It's like, this lady once was walking across the road, and as she was walking along, she hears this voice that said, stop! She stops. And all of a sudden, right in front of her, a brick hits the ground from where it fell off the roof. She was like, whew. She walks a little bit further, gets to that corner of the road, and she's going to walk across. And as she starts to, that voice says, stop! And she stops, and a car doesn't stop at the red light and just blasts through. She's like, who are you? He said, I'm your guardian angel. And she just gets so mad. And he's like, what's upsetting? She said, where were you on my wedding day? Now, you don't have to go tell that joke around. That might get you in trouble. There are three important truths you need to understand about when we talk about being able to make choices and decisions in our lives. There's three things you need to understand as you make that. First, like we said, you've got to know that God is who He says He is. But these three things then add to that. From the moment I understand God and I'm following God and I love God, go with me now to Genesis, the second chapter, and the 16th verse. And the Lord God commanded the man, saying, of every tree of the garden thou mayest, what? Freely eat. But of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil thou shalt not eat of it, for in the day that thou eatest thereof thou shalt surely die. Just God being God. He's making a statement. Now, here's the first thing I need you to understand about decisions in life. Is that exercise always your freedom. Look at the person beside you and tell them, say, always exercise your freedom. The moment you don't feel free in anything, the moment you feel bound by something, you're in a bad place. Always exercise your freedom. Listen to me this way. You can always choose anything you want. That's freedom. Every one of us in this room is free. We can choose anything we want. You can go eat the salad today. Or you can get the bacon on the hamburger and the cheese, pepper jack cheese. And you can do all you want to do. You can choose anything you want. Can't stop you. I don't even argue people at that point. Here's the problem. But choices always have responsibilities. That's the part that always gets people mad. Now, I can't help if you want to smoke three packs a day, or I can't help if you want to lie, I can't help if you want to cheat, can't help if you want to break into somebody's house and steal something. I can't help what choices. You're free to make choices. You're free to think about and to decide what you want to do with your life. Every one of us in this room has that ability. I don't argue with people at that point. I think that's why some people get kind of frustrated with me. Like, well, Pastor Lott, don't even come over. You don't check on me. You don't do this. You got a choice. The doctor goes to his office every single day. He opens the door. He tells you when he's going to be open and when he's going to close. And you know what? He just has the feeling that you got enough sense to know when you need a doctor. He doesn't go open the phone book and start calling in the A's and say, do you feel good today? Just checking. I'm open. And one of the hardest things as pastor that I had to learn in my life was that simple rule. That if you don't want me to pray for you, I don't want to pray for you. If you don't want to call me, I don't want to be called. Because it's going to frustrate you and me. Because if you don't believe prayer is going to fix anything, then all I believe is prayer is going to fix anything. So me and you are on totally different levels. But now, if I can do you any good, if I can help you, you will not bother me if you call me at 1 o'clock in the morning, at 6 o'clock in the morning, at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. It doesn't matter. I will be there. If all possible, I will be there. But we're in this mindset to where we want to operate in level one. We want to see if we can just help you make good choices. If I just stay in your life and I just stay on top of you and I just... It'll work. Some parents get awful frustrated when those teenagers finally get their car keys. Some of those parents get awful frustrated when they finally... I go at it from a totally different strategy. When I was raising Taylor, I knew there would come a day when I'd have to give him car keys. I knew there would come a day when he would drive by himself. I knew there was a day he would be gone and I wouldn't know where he's at. I spent an awful lot of time not telling him what to do. I spent an awful lot of time telling him why I felt he should do this. What it had to do was it had to settle in me what I believed, not him. I had to be able to stick my nose out and say, Charles, this is what I believe. Taylor, my whole life is built around this. And if you do this, I believe with all my heart, God will bless you. And God will keep His hand on you. I'm only telling you what I have learned in my life. Now, you will have to make your own choices. And I'll go ahead and tell you, you're going to make some mistakes. I did. A couple of you in here haven't. But most of us in here have. We've made choices and we've made mistakes and our kids will too. But the deal is while they're driving by themselves and while they're alone and while they are thinking about what they're going to do, is there enough information in their mind to let them have a good ability to make a good decision. Some of my favorite times was when Jennifer was growing up and Chrissy was growing up and others, and I'd be driving that bus and they'd come up and sit right here by the door of the bus. And we'd drive 5 hours and they would talk about boys and who to date and this. And I used to think, I wish y'all would go sit down. But looking back, I missed that in some ways. Why? Because those were the moments where I wasn't telling them what they had to do. I was going to love them regardless, but I was doing my best to put as much information in their life so that when the decision time came, parents, put that information in them. Don't tell them. Let them cook breakfast for you. Let them burn something. Look, the greatest place you got to teach them is right where you are. Don't tell them, look, just go sit in there and watch TV. Because if that's all the information they're getting before you give them the keys, you're in trouble. You had better let them make some mistakes, do some stuff wrong. Taylor just got a fender bender and he's learned what that's like. I can't save him from it. He's having to work right now. He's going to pay part of the deductible to get that fixed. That's breaking his heart. And you know what he told me driving in today? He said, I guarantee I won't drive the same way when I get the truck back. Not that he drove bad. But on rainy days, I have a feeling you don't want to get behind Taylor for a while because he ain't going to be going about 35 miles an hour. He does not want to be back in the passenger side of Daddy's truck. He's learned something. There were things I couldn't tell him. In your life, you have the ability to choose, but you will have to live with the responsibility. Freedom has boundaries. Listen to me. Freedom has limitations. God said, look, you can freely eat of every tree, but this one. You are free to do whatever you want, but you can't do this. Go with me to Galatians 5:1. I'll show you how God speaks it to us. When we talk about our Christian life, here's what he says. Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty wherewith Christ has made us. Now, I love how he says this. Stand fast. Now, that's your command. Well, if I'm free, I don't have to stand fast. No, you need to stand fast in your freedom. And be not entangled again in the yoke of bondage. Go to verse 13. For brethren, you have been called unto liberty. Only, just like we're in the Garden of Eden, only do not use this liberty to do something that you know is not right. Why? For occasion to the flesh, but by love serve one another. Two types of people you'll meet in the world. You'll either meet people that love helping people, or you'll meet people that love helping themselves. It's only two people in the world. Their whole life is either built around them helping themselves, and the sad part is, it's got in the pulpit now. Used to, it was in the pews and we were trying to teach it. Teach love, teach truth. Now it's in the pulpits. To where now you got more people up there that love themselves than love the people that they're serving and love the people that they're supposed to give their life for. Verse 24 and 25. And they that are of Christ have crucified the flesh with the what? This is part of maturity. If you're going to be Christ-like, then a mature Christian has crucified these desires and lusts and all these things. That's your calling card. Your calling card as a Christian is that I have freedom. Well, you can do what you want to. No, I can't. Because there's some things that are not expedient to get me to where I want to be. I have given my life to Christ, but I had to crucify the lusts and affections. Verse 25. If we live in the Spirit, which means on Sunday, you know, Sunday, when we all in the Spirit. There's a Monday. You think this all started, all this messed up church stuff started last year? No, it started back when it was getting started. And Paul was saying, look, I know how y'all are on Sunday or y'all Saturday or whatever day you worship. But I also know how you act on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday. And let me tell you something. If you're going to worship in the Spirit, if you're going to live in the Spirit, if you're going to say I'm full of the Spirit, if you're going to, then learn to walk in Him. Learn how to walk in the Spirit. Learn how to live from day to day, making decisions in the Spirit. Just like you got that beeper, just like that commercial with that guy. You all of a sudden you start to do something that's not right, you hear the horn go off. Beep! When you're flipping the channel on the TV and all of a sudden there's a show there and it's like, gotta go. I was flipping through last night and one of my favorite comedians, I can't watch him, is Jeff Dunham. Probably one of the funniest men in the world. And also one of the most foul-mouthed. I mean, if you watch him do his characters and the old man and Bubba and Ahmed, the dead terrorist, you know, I kill you! It is hilarious. Can't watch it. I flipped over there. I was flipping through the channels, me and Elise, and Nathan was in his room goofing off, and I ran across, it was Jeff Dunham's newest one, and it was on the Comedy Channel or something like that. And when it came on, I stopped right there. I said, well, let's just see what it is. And he had them all dressed up like Halloween characters and all this. And he didn't take a minute and a half. And Nathan had done left what he was doing. He was coming in there. He said, oh, if we're watching this, I'll watch this. And as soon as it came on, I started to change the channel. And Nathan was like, oh, never mind. I'm responsible for the decisions that I have to make. I have to also walk in the Spirit. I love the way teenagers are. I was a teenager once, and I said this same thing. I can't wait till I'm on my own and I'm free. Free! Now, I'm free to pay the mortgage. I'm free to pay for groceries. I'm free to have kids and pay for them. I'm free when they were younger to change them, buy bottles, wake up in the middle of the night, take care of them. I was free to feed them. I was free to buy clothes that they outgrew in 6 months and have to go buy more clothes. I was free to forget what it was like to go out on a date again. I don't even know what that feels like anymore. Me and Elise look at each other. Our dates are built around, hey, we need to go pick up something from the church. Let's just go eat while we're over there. We'll call it a date. Yeah. Now that I'm older, I think back and I think, I wish I was in bondage again. Stuck in my mama's house. Food on the table. You know how I was in such bondage and couldn't do what I wanted to do and anybody ever wake up like that? Wish I was in bondage again. Now, I know you teenagers, y'all don't know, understand that. You want to be free. One day you will. You'll be so free. It'll turn your hair gray how free you'll be. You'll be free to choose. Really and truly, there's only three things you can choose. Any kind of freedom. You're free to choose your attitude. Every one of us in this room, my outlook in life is determined by me. I don't care who wins the election. I don't care who does this. My outlook in life is determined by my attitude. I choose my attitude. I choose to either walk around, oh man, the world just falling to pieces. I'm telling you, it's so bad. You better hope so-and-so don't get elected or this doesn't happen. I'm telling you, the whole world's going to fall apart. I'm free to smile and say, I'm trusting God. And whether whoever wins, as far as I know, they ain't going to vote God off the throne. So whatever's going to happen is going to happen, and God's still going to be in control, and He's still going to run the show. Now, it might make things a little tighter, a little tougher, whoever, this and that, whatever you say, I agree. But the fact is, it ain't going to change my attitude. Some of us watch way too much news. And you get all your attitude and all your feelings and all your hope from what somebody else says. Second thing that you choose is your actions. Nobody else chooses your actions. You can quit blaming everybody else. The only person that chooses to do what you, the only person that didn't order that salad was me. Here's the problem. If I don't see it that way, then I spend most of my life reacting. Something happens, I react. Something happens, I react. Can I tell you, I know what I'll do if Elise dies. I already have it planned. Elise knows me so well. I plan everything. I could tell you what I'd do if one of my kids dies. I could tell you how I would react. Why? Because I never react to anything. If there's something that scares you, here's what I want you to do. I want you to take the time to sit down and figure out exactly what you would do if it happened. If you need to spend time in your Bible, if you need to spend time on your knees, if you need to spend time... Because people will say, well, nothing seems to bother you. I've already thought about it. I've already thought about if I die. I've already got it planned. The church gets paid for. I have key man insurance. I got this taken care of. I got that taken care of. Don't worry. It's all been planned. In fact, my youth pastor told me the other day, he looked at me and said, hey, we'd be better off if something happened to you. He even had the audacity to say, we could bump for a raise because we'll have less debt. Meeting adjourned. Yeah. But it's those who plan for everything in their life. Do you already know where you're going to be buried? Do you already have that taken care of? Already have that situated? It don't mean you got to go buy everything. It don't mean you got to spend. But it means you need to have some plan for things in your life. If you don't make the decision, somebody else will. You may end up beside your mother-in-law buried the rest of your life, the lady you hate the most, because it was the open lot. Maybe this will help their relationship being so close together. The third thing you choose is your altitude. You decide how high. The only person that dreams is you. I can't dream for you. I can't determine what's important to you, what you're willing to fight for, what you're willing to die for. The only person in this room that can dream of a better life is you. If you don't dream of a better life, you won't have one. You can hear me talk about mine. You can hear me dream about mine and what I want to do and watch it all unfold and think that'll make you feel better, but it won't. Every one of you in this room has to decide the altitude of your life. Where do you want to be 10 years from now? Where do you want to be? Me and Elise have planned this 20th anniversary for 10 years. We decide the altitude. Now, we could have wasted all our money the last 10 years and goofed off and said, when we got here, like, well, let's just go to Jackson. We ain't got no money. But over the course of years, we have put back and put back some things I didn't get to do. We were supposed to buy new rings for each other on our anniversary. I told Elise the other day, I said, that ain't happening. But what we are going to do is we're going to load up in the car as soon as the kids get out. We done talked about sandals and all that. I done preached that, so I'm not going to go back. That hurts. But see, I could have the time of your life. Not going to do that. One time I want to go to the beach, I'm going to the mountains. So we're not going to sandals. We're going to load the kids up all in the vehicle. We're going to, as soon as school lets out, we're headed north till we find snow. Because they love to ski, and we got to do it one time before, and we enjoyed that. We're going to take videos of our wedding. My kids have never seen our wedding. We've had it transitioned from VHS. Some of y'all never seen one of those. It's a VHS. And now it's on DVD, and we've had that transition. So one of the nights we're going to sit there and the kids are going to be tortured by watching our wedding. We had to plan all that stuff. We had to look in advance. Nobody chooses the altitude but me. Nobody chooses the altitude but me. I can make it as good or as bad as I want my life. Number two is this, and I got to hurry. Ooh, I know I got to hurry. Yeah. It's bad going blind. It tells for long what gets me to hold it, like Johnny does. And that's bothering me. Let me just say it this way. A company once asked its employees, do you have a dream? Do you know what the response was? 100% of the people in that company said, yes, I do. 100% of the people said, I have a dream. But then they asked the next question. What are you doing right now, and what have you planned to make it come true? It dropped to only 10% of the people. And if I was to put that poll to you right now, what do you dream? What would you like to do within 10 years? What would you like to do? Well, man, this is what I hope I get to do. And this, well, tell me what you did. Tell me what book you've been reading. Tell me what things you've been doing. Tell me What you've been doing to get to that, we'd love to have a house. Well, tell me what you're doing to get to the house. Tell me what you're doing. I admire Kenneth so much because several years ago, he had a choice. And he was going through a time where he was living in a rental house, and the guy wouldn't sell him the rental house. And Kenneth come to me and said, Pastor, I'm in a situation, you know, I'm paying rent, so I can't save, I can't do this, and I'm stuck, and I want to get a house. And it was a hard decision because what had happened was David and Sandy Tadlock, who he doesn't work for, just good friends of his, came to him and said, look, where our stockyard is, we're wanting to build an apartment. And if you'll help us build that apartment, we want you to stay there, basically rent-free. And Kenneth come to me, and we were talking about it. I said, well, Kenneth, what's your dream? He said, I want to own my own house. I said, well, this sounds like a step toward. I said, how much money can you save a month not paying rent? How much money? I said, think about what you could do. If you're serious about it, this is an opportunity. It may seem bad having to live in somebody else's place. Some of us have done it. We've had to live with Mama, had to live with this. Trent, when he moved here, lived at Roosevelt in a camper for a year and a half until they got his house built. It ain't always going to start off the way, but the dream is what keeps pushing you. The dream is what keeps forcing you. Kenneth, this last several months, something good happened. Got to move out of the apartment. He owns his own place now. God took him from one door to the next door. In your life, that's the way it works. What are you doing today that's heading you towards your dream? What are you doing today? Do you know what that dream is? Do you know what the most important thing is? If you say the most important thing in my life is my kids, how much time are you spending with those kids? I'll never be the dad my dad was. I say that all the time. Because that was my dad's dream. My dad's dream was to be the best dad he could be. He didn't care if every church he ever pastored went from 50 to 2. He could care less. He was. But I tell you one thing my dad was going to do. He was going to get out in the yard every day, and he was going to play ball with us, and he was not failing at the one thing that meant the most. And when my dad comes here and sits in church and hears Trent sing and hears me preach, you may look at him and think he's proud. No. He's looking at his investment. He's thinking to himself, I gave 40 years of my life. He worked in factories where wood fell and pinched off part of his fingers to keep groceries on the table. He worked in grocery stores, working through rotten potatoes to keep food. And he'd bring home the culls just so we'd have food to eat a lot of times. He'd bring home a box of half, you know, the culls were just things they couldn't wrap and couldn't sell. And he'd bring them home and say, all right, all of us would grab a knife. We'd know to cut the bad spot off the pears or the whatever it was, and we'd cut them up into small things. Some of y'all grew up like this. We'd cut them up into small things, pour sugar on them, and then put them in a little Tupperware and freeze them. Done that a million times. But my dad had a dream. And he got that dream when he was a sharecropper with his dad years ago. And it was that one day, I'll have a family. And my kids will be blessed. And he worked very hard to get there. What is the dream that you're worth working for? What's worth your time and your energy? Most people will tell you, I have a dream. But most people will tell you, I don't have a plan. Number two is this: simply this. Accept responsibility. The only person who can accept responsibility is you. This tree in the Garden of Eden that they couldn't eat from represented simply this: doubt and disobedience. That's all it represented. The only reason you would eat of that tree and not all the other good trees around is if you doubted God was really letting you have the best. If God says you can do this, this, and this, Tim, but don't do this, the only reason I ever go after that is that I feel like God is lying to me. Responsibility means to own up to my choices. Isn't it amazing how Adam and Eve later blame each other? Point fingers. It's the woman. Woman you gave me. Messed my life up. Second thing is, you're not responsible for what happens to you. You're not responsible in this life for what happens to you. Get that out of your head. There's some things that's happened in your life. You're not responsible for what happened. But here's what you are responsible for. You are responsible for how you respond to it. You are responsible to how you respond to it. You're not responsible for others, but you are responsible to others. Say, I'm not responsible for you. Boy, that was one of the most liberating days of being a pastor. Is when I realized, I'm not responsible. I open these doors every Sunday, and I don't know who's coming. I'm not responsible for you. But I am responsible to you. I'm responsible to stand in this pulpit and live a life and to represent God in such a way so that if you need an example, you'll find an example. I'm responsible to you. That's what you are in this world. You're not responsible for your friends. You're not responsible for your parents. You're not responsible, but you're responsible to them. You're responsible to live a life so that they have an example, so that somebody can see it, so somebody can find God through the way you live. When we talk about not being responsible for others, but to others, I love the way this story goes. I want to show it to you real quick. Go with me to the 16th and 17th verse again. I'm going to show you something and I'll close. I promise, real quick. Not long. I got time. I ain't even got enough time yet. I'm watching. This is what the 16th and 17th verse. I need you to listen very carefully. And the Lord God commanded the man, saying, of every tree of the garden thou mayest what? Freely eat. Verse 17. But of the tree of knowledge of good and evil thou shalt not eat of it. For in the day that thou eatest thereof thou shalt surely die. So the rule is, if you do what? If you eat it, you... Okay, very simple. Now, go with me to chapter 3. And I'll show you why most churches get messed up. And why most families get messed up. And how the devil gets into stuff. Chapter 3, beginning at verse 2. And the woman said unto the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden. Is that true? That's what the Bible said. It's what God said. But of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God hath said, you shall not eat of it. Right? Neither shall you... lest you die. Now that's strange. Did God tell them not to touch it? Can I tell you what happened? If you read right after that 16th and 17th verse, you'll find that when God put Adam in the garden and gave him the commandment, He says the very next verse, He said, it's not good that man should be alone. I will make him a helpmate. And from his own organs, from his own ribs, from his own parts, He created a woman. A partner. Someone to walk beside. Somebody for him to be responsible for. Two. For somebody for him to live in front of. For somebody for him to be connected with. Now, just like most of us men, when he started explaining to her the garden situation, he looked at her and said, look, listen, woman. That's what he said. That's what he called her. Woman. He said, listen, woman, we can eat all of this stuff. We can eat everything you see. But you see that tree right there? Don't touch it. Don't get near it. Don't eat it. If you touch that thing, you'll die. Any of y'all ever explained that stuff to y'all's kids that way? You lied to them. Because you didn't want to have to deal with it. Pastors do the same thing all the time. We just don't do it. Don't look at it. Don't do nothing. Don't touch anything. Don't dance. Don't go to parties. Don't do this. Don't go to movies. Don't do that. Charles knows what I'm talking about. We was raised in the good old Church of God. That's the reason I didn't join until I was 19 years old. I told him, I'm going to parties. And I am going to the movies. And my dad was a minister. He said, Tim, you need to join. I said, can't do it, Dad. I'll be lying. I'm a lot of things. I am not a liar. I said, I'm going to do some of the stuff they said. And I'm probably going to date some girls that wear makeup. That's another story. So in my life, just like this, what happens in churches and different places, You ever notice blacks and whites ain't supposed to be in church together? It says don't be unequally yoked. And I'm thinking, how ignorant are you? That ain't even the whole Scripture. It says with unbelievers. But here's the thing. If my ignorance starts spewing long enough, before long I tell people things that aren't even what God said. Be careful what people tell you. You ain't supposed to be hanging around with them. You ain't supposed to be going over there. What are you going to that white church? Going to them black people. Do that. Do that. Think, if you get in that book long enough, it'll tell you what God says and doesn't say. And that I'll go to war with. That I'll fight with. But if it ain't in there, I really just call you stupid and go on. I'm sorry. I do. I don't have time to deal with ignorance. I don't have time to do that. Why? Because you're going to meet enough people that do like Adam did and just tell them, just don't do it. Why? Because I said so. As a parent, I ain't got time to explain it just because I said so. And then we wonder why one day they do it. It's because you can't make choices for people, but you can give them all the information. If Adam would have just told her, if he'd have just said, look, Eve, God said if we eat that tree, that you can look at it, you can do what you want to, but Eve, we can't eat of it. If we eat of that tree, we will die. Okay, I understand that. But when the serpent comes in chapter 3, verse 1, he looks at her, and you know what the question he asked her? The question that didn't have an answer. Did God really say that if you touched or ate of that tree, you would die? Did God really say that? And she didn't have an answer. Because when she plucked the fruit off of it, guess what happened? Sometimes we think she just walks up to the tree and grabs the fruit and, oh, no. She's weighing it. The lie was, if I touch it, I'll die. And Adam is sitting right there and she reaches up and plucks the fruit and says, huh, that doesn't happen to me. Well, if you lied to me on the first part, then you probably lied to me on the... Number three, I won't even cover no points, I'm through. Number three is this. Always prepare your life for accountability. Once you accept responsibility, always realize you will be accountable for your life, for your decisions. I may not do a lot of things right, but I try to live my life in a way that I'm accountable for my life. Here's a phrase you can take with you and I'll dismiss. Because I promised I'd let you go. And you want to write this sentence down, you can. If you want to remember it, that's fine. But here's a sentence. I wish if you don't take anything else, take this sentence. Your life is a gift, or is God's gift to you. Your life is God's gift to you. That's what He gave you. He could have gave you a lot less. He could have gave you maybe more if you think so. But your life today is a gift from God. But here's the second part of it. What you do with it, what you do with it is your gift to Him. If you're going to live in the Spirit, then walk in the Spirit. That's the question that haunts me every day of my life. I get up in the morning and I realize God gave me strength to walk and to do. It's God's gift to me. I didn't wake up this morning blind. I didn't wake up this morning crippled. I didn't wake up this morning in a hospital bed. Today, God gave me a gift. I have a gift from God. But now what I do in these 24 hours today is my decision of what kind of gift I give back. When you leave this place today, you'll decide what kind of gift you give back to God. Oh, but I love God. I don't even want to hear that. Let me tell you what you got to do today. Decisions, decisions, decisions. And what decisions you make What you decide to put in your body, what do you decide to watch, what you decide to sing, what you decide to glorify, what you brag on, what you is your gift back to God. Paul made it simple. He said, whatever things are good, whatever things are holy, whatever things are of good report, think on these things. Whatever has glory, whatever gives God that kind of glory, think on these things. I hope today when you leave, I hope as you make decisions today that you make good ones. I hope you do it with the right attitude. I hope you have the right actions. And I hope you do it with a mindset that I got an altitude I want to reach. My marriage, my life. I make these decisions because I want to go somewhere. Will you pray with me? Father,